brains of the people are more interesting than the looks, I think.
Electric power is everywhere present in a limited quantity.
Jane, if you really want something and you work hard and you take advantage of opportunity and you never give up.
You're listening to Human Angle, a podcast that focuses on the hidden lives of scientists asking what makes them human. I'm your host, Kenna Castleberry. This bonus episode covers an exclusive interview with Dr. Shubha Tole. She is a professor at the Tata Institute of Fundamental Research in India. She looks at genetic mechanisms and signaling pathways in the developing brain. This interview covers the impact of her parents at a young age, as well as her own work to go into neurobiology. Listen now.
So I'll just start with the first question, if that's okay, which is what I asked with describing your history of research and what has made you want to go into neuroscience, if you could go into that.
I had always been a curious student. It was always the why and the how come. I can't remember a time I didn't want to understand how things around me worked. I think my earliest memory is probably when I was 10. I was doing a science project or something at school. It seemed to be that sort of that was the most exciting thing to pursue, to explore how and why and how come and why not. In high school, I had a rival love for physics and biology, and it was really tough to choose between them. But I think the complexity of biology just won out, starting, I think, with a marvelous lecture on development by late Sam Wog, a zoology professor in my college, St. Xavier's, Mumbai. He was a teacher for the undergrad classes, but he chose to come to our 12th grade class and completely blew us away with his whole vision of the three-layer model, gastrulation. He just presented it to us as a engineering problem, as a solution to a complex engineering problem, that you would build an embryo in three concentric cylinders of cell types that would then give rise to everything else. In fact, today I teach development using his example and the inspiration that he brought to us in that lecture. So it had to be biology. It almost had to be development, and it simply had to be the development of the brain. I could not think of a more mystifying, inspiring, challenging organ to be studying. And I would look at things and I would wonder, how does color vision develop? And how do we develop the ability to dream? There was no internet back then. I was an undergrad in the mid-80s. And I remember trying to lay my hands on as many books as I could to try and find out. Time came to decide what to do after, or where to pursue my future graduate training. I explored research options in India, and there just weren't graduate programs in neuroscience at the time. So I guess I left the country in order to study neuroscience. I applied to all the schools I could find in the US. Again, no internet, no websites. So I went to the United States Education Foundation and poured over brochures and identified neuroscience programs and applied. And that's how I came to pursue neuroscience in the graduate program at Caltech.
And then as far as just kind of moving forward in your trajectory from Caltech, how did you end up back in India doing what you do now?
I think I always wanted to give back to the society that contributed to my education. I didn't originally want to leave the country for graduate school. And I'm very glad I did, because I think training in a different country just broadens you in so many unexpected ways. But I think from the very first Bi-150, the introduction to neuroscience class at Caltech, I remember thinking how I would teach this when I returned back home. I don't remember a time I wasn't planning, simply because I sort of wanted to, the idea that that neuroscience programs need to flourish in my country was just something that seemed so important and something I had to contribute to. So I think I was on a sort of idealistic mission to return and contribute to Indian science in this particular specialization, which in fact was underrepresented then. And now there is a wonderful, small but wonderful community of neuroscientists, many of whom are friends as well as colleagues. And it's been quite a charged experience to contribute to the process from this very early stage.
So moving on to the next question, just how did your parents kind of foster your love of science? Obviously, you know, if you have a family that's more scientific focused, you tend to lean more towards a career in the sciences. So I'm curious how that turned out for you.
My parents both had sort of science tech medical backgrounds. My father worked at, as it turns out, the same institute that I currently have a job at, the Tata Institute of Fundamental Research. I literally traveled halfway across the world, all the way to California, to return to this wonderful, it's one of India's premier institutes. And it just worked out that I'm fortunate enough to be on the faculty here. My father was trained, he was part of a microwave engineering group. And my childhood was filled with sort of excitement just to all the projects his group would take on. So for example, they would contribute to the radar tracking of whenever India sent up a satellite, his group would be part of the radar tracking process. They built a radar lighthouse, they called it a radar beacon, which would have obvious advantages over a regular light, right? Regular lighthouse. They built a weather tracking system that they could send up in balloons, and it just seemed the possibilities seemed endless in science and technology. My mother was an inspiration of a completely different sort of flavor. My mother was an occupational therapist, a profession she chose because she was she had financial constraints growing up. Both my parents grew up in pre-independence India with financial hardship. My mother always wanted to be a surgeon, and she couldn't support herself through medical school. So she and in fact her younger sister took turns. One worked and the other studied, and they supported each other's education in that way. So my mother was an occupational therapist. And she worked at the Indian Cancer Society and then the Tata Memorial Hospital, which is a cancer hospital. She showed me by her example that one's job definition doesn't need to limit what one does in life. She just broke barriers in her profession. She began designing indigenous prostheses. So for poor women from villages who couldn't possibly afford imported breast prostheses, made of silicone and, you know, high-end materials, she would design prostheses made from sponge and weigh them down with tiny beads so that they have the look and the feel and the shape that made the women feel complete. She would design appliances for amputees so that they could roll chapatis, the tortillas that we make at home, with one hand. So she actually designed one-handed aids and appliances. She would design leg prostheses and everything from scratch using absolutely minimal materials so that the poor could afford them. So this was just so completely inspiring. I grew up thinking that normal meant that under my bed would be molds pour my mom to pour latex into and then, you know, do her prosthesis experiments with. I grew up thinking this was a normal life. And so by her example, she simply showed me that you know, that there are no limits to how creative one can be and how much one should do in life. The inspiration has to come from within. And I think with these sort of complementary and, you know, unusual backgrounds, my love of science just flourished. So I mentioned earlier that there was no internet back then. My mother would scour the used book market. You know, we had some financially strained circumstances too. So she would scour the used book market, and using her knowledge of library science, she trained as a librarian as well. So she gave up her work as an occupational therapist for 7 years when me and my brother came along. And then she trained as a librarian so that she could work in a library and have, you know, the same vacations as we did and be home when we needed her. And this grew her. I mean, you know, she used every bit of training and education in very creative ways. So I remember wandering around the used books that would be sold on the sidewalks in Mumbai around Flora Fountain. And there we found the Time Life series, which she knew about because of her library work. I still have the one titled Growth, which has an adult hand and a little child hand, one on top of the other. And I think my love of development may have just come from that one book. You know, so there was growth, there was vision, I remember the titles and I remember sort of devouring them, just inhaling them. So yeah, that's how my parents fostered my love of science.
Wow, that's incredible. And what an amazing story from your mother to just include you in part of her work as well, which is amazing. So moving on to the next question, how do you personally, you know, in your own work as a neuroscientist, feel about making important and concrete discoveries? So I know your work has worked on development, but I'm curious if you could talk about some of the work that you've done in the past and what you are looking for in the future.
I think I enjoy the process more than anything in the world. It's the process of discovery rather than the actual, you know, a discovery. Because it's almost like there's a little discovery every day, you know. Every experiment tells you something. And yes, many experiments eventually end up proving something and then you can make a conclusive statement. But it's the excitement of finding out that I think is the heart of science. We have made some you know, unexpected discoveries. So I mentioned my father's radar lighthouse. So we discovered a signaling center in the middle of the brain, which when I do public talks, I describe as a lighthouse. A signaling center which emits signals, like a lighthouse emits light, and the cells nearest the signaling center receive the strongest signals, and the cells farther away receive the weaker signals. So it's as if the little boats nearest the lighthouse, you know, turn red because they've seen the most light, and the boats farther away turn blue. And that's how you can pattern a complex tissue to become specialized. So we discovered that the signaling center called the cortical hem induces the hippocampus in the brain. And we did this by creating embryos with multiple hems, and we found multiple hippocampi in the brain. So this was sort of an unexpected finding that we had no idea we would stumble into. And I would say this was one of the exciting things to come from my lab.
Wow, that's awesome. So to ask the last question before I let you go, obviously, you talked a bit about this before, but talking about how you didn't have a neuroscientist community in India, and that your work personally has worked on creating this community and allowing access for people in your area to this field. How does that make you feel, and what does that look like for you?
It's extremely rewarding. It's extremely rewarding to build something new that enriches Indian science. So neuroscience in India certainly existed before me. There have been fantastic Drosophila neuroscience labs. So the department that I joined was in fact created, nucleated by a visionary scientist, Obaid Siddiqui, who set up Drosophila olfactory neuroscience. Well, vertebrate brain development is something that I think my lab was the first to begin to study in India. And I think even today, vertebrate brain development describes maybe 5 or 10 labs in the country. So it's incredibly rewarding to be one of such a small community, then being the 388th lab, in a community that's already bustling and is already taken off. So people can study this field, brain development, without having to leave the country. And this is beneficial to many because, for various problems, sometimes two-body reasons, sometimes financial reasons, not everybody can sort of pursue the field of their choice, in the location of their choice. So this allows options. And I should say that what's been really rewarding is I've been fortunate to train many women scientists. I've had amazing women students, PhD students, really gifted postdocs. I've had insightful male students. It's been really thrilling to interact with so many creative minds who come in with no background in neuroscience, because most Indian undergrad programs don't even mention the word neuroscience or brain, or didn't at least. Now things are changing. So they come in with little or no background, and then they contribute to world-class publications and discoveries in this field. So it's tremendously fulfilling.